Welcome, one and all, to Season 10, Episode 1 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday, the 7th of March, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the community.
Good start, good start.
Well I'm done. Mark. And sure? Joining me this week are the two finest of gentlemen, Mr. Alan Pope.
Hello.
And Mr. Martin Wimpress.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, apparently. Just about made it through that in one piece.
Have you finished your beer yet?
Barely started, so that's a good sign. So here we are again then.
Ready and raring to go?
Yes, for another year.
I've just opened a bottle of champagne.
Good.
Technically, we don't have to do a full year. We only need to do one episode in order to fulfil our requirement of reaching season 10.
Great.
Just saying that, you know.
Right. Excellent. Well, we're doing two right now, so, you know, start as you mean to go on. So, guys, what have you been up to since, last time we did a recording?
We went to Barcelona.
We did.
Oh, yes. That sounds nice.
It was interesting. I've never been... No, I have been to Barcelona, but only on a stag do. Never been for work.
And drank, what were you doing there?
Drank about the same amount. We were there for MWC.
And what is MWC for the uninitiated? Mobile World Congress.
Yeah. Only like the biggest mobile conference on the planet.
And what was Ubuntu doing at Mobile World Conference Congress? Mobile World Congress.
Well, it turns out Ubuntu is rather big in telecommunications.
Wow, so, could have fooled me.
so just like the rest of the IT industry has sort of embraced virtualization and containerization, the telecommunications industry is doing the same thing, and they're moving away from big single-purpose devices to containers and VMs with software-defined networks and virtual network functions and all of this sort of thing.
Yeah, but they've all got new, different and interesting names
that
are unique to the telecoms industry. So there's like a whole glossary that you have to learn before you go out on the show floor.
So we can rattle off our SDRs and our SDNs and our VNFIs and all of the rest of it and our CEPs. We've had a training course where we're acronym ready for telecommunications.
So this wasn't going to promote Ubuntu on phones. This was promoting the other bits of Ubuntu to
there was a lot there actually. If you walked up to the stand, the first thing you'd probably see is robots walking around, either kicking balls or just walking around, or things you could interact with that had like a Teletubby screen on their tummy. But then the very next thing you'd see is phones. The guys from Fairphone were there, and the Ubu Ports community team were there. They had a whole plinth to themselves with a whole bunch of devices right out on the front of the stand. So
they actually had prime position.
Yeah, they totally did.
They had the best spot on the Ubuntu stand.
We were buried in the dungeon at the back.
Yeah.
I say dungeon, it was really bright and airy. But
yeah, your t-shirts were particularly bright.
They were. EasyJet orange.
No missing you.
Yeah.
So yeah, there were, I mean, you'd be forgiven for thinking that we didn't do phones because the phones were right there, but there was a whole ton of other stuff as well. Mostly not done by us, mostly done by partners. So there were people from Screenly showing off their digital signage products built on Ubuntu. There was IBM showing off some big data stuff built on Ubuntu.
Blue Horizon.
That's it, Blue Horizon. Yeah.
And the whole point of that was to put intelligence on IoT devices at the very edge of the network so they could make good decisions about what data they should be sending back to the cloud so that it's just sending all the data all the time and swamping the network.
Yes.
Yeah, it's quite cool.
There was a great demo where they had some guys with a camera doing facial recognition in an elevator or lift, which was supposed to illustrate, you know, doing some clever stuff at the edge of the network, not sending all the images up to the cloud and then doing the processing in the cloud, but actually doing it locally, like in the compute power that was in the lift that could detect if there was a robber in there or something, or detect if someone's fallen over and is unwell and could raise the alarm or something. And that was quite cool. But it was really nice to see all these different demos all around the stand, which were built on top of Ubuntu. So it wasn't just us there. It was a whole bunch of partners that really like validated what we were doing. It was really cool.
My favorite one there was the augmented reality helmet. That, did you have a go on that yet?
No, I didn't. I'm too scared. I'm too scared of people taking photos of me and looking like an idiot.
Yeah, I noticed everyone taking photographs of me looking like an idiot.
Yeah, I've got those.
So the augmented reality helmet was quite amazing. And I think the words that came out of my mouth at the end of having a play on that was, this is why virtual reality is rubbish. to which the guy who was doing the demo said, yes, this is what I keep on trying to tell everybody.
So how was your reality augmented by this helmet?
So you put this helmet on and you've kind of got a visor that comes down from sort of the top of your forehead to sort of the bottom of your nose. So you've sort of got this like wraparound sort of visor in front of you that you can see through. So unlike virtual reality where you are blinkered like a, you know, a racing horse, you can actually see through this. And then they've got a number of demonstrations, and the one that I opted for was jet engine repair, seeing that I've got a somewhat basic understanding of how jet engines work. And what that then produced in front of me was a full engine from an aircraft, all of the parts running, and even the airflow through the engine being projected.
Wow.
And I was able to, the idea is here is as a maintenance engineer, you can bring this up as reference. So I was able to walk around this thing and actually sort of poke my head into it through the layers of the bits of the engine and actually see everything inside it.
Wow. And bring up like all of the maintenance manuals.
Yeah, it looked quite funny when he was bending down to put his head inside a jet engine. That was quite amusing because nobody else could see what
nobody
he could
see.
See
it. But this jet engine is projected in 3D in a space that you can walk around under. You know, you can peer through it from any direction. It is quite amazing. And there was a number of, and it's also got things like heat sensors built into it as well.
And this is all running on Ubuntu.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it was that was my favorite. The robots were really cool, but I thought the augmented reality was quite outstanding.
Cool. Right. Well, we'll have some links in the show notes if you want to see a bit more about what happened at Mobile World Congress.
We'll just give a quick shout out to our friends Marius and Max at UbuntuFun.de. They were part of the team for UB Port, so they were showing off the Fairphone 2 running Ubuntu Phone. But they also recorded several videos and a podcast from the Ubuntu stand at MWC, and they're all on their website now, UbuntuFun.de. And the interviews are in English, so if you're a German speaker, you can watch it all. And if you're only an English language speaker, then the interviews and what have you, you can watch and enjoy.
Cool.
And now it's time for some news.
And first up, Ben Francis, longtime Mozilla developer, has written a retrospective about Firefox OS. And I found this absolutely fascinating. I was really interested to read this. Obviously, it's a bit inside baseball. If you weren't really interested in mobile phones or free software and Mozilla, then it might not be super interesting to you. But for me, it was like being an outsider to the Firefox community. It was really nice to see someone break down, you know, the project history and things they did well and things from his perspective that they didn't do quite so well. And, you know, some of their big achievements and mistakes as he saw them.
So while we were off air, I think that Firefox OS was finally decommissioned, wasn't it?
They took it out the back and shot it in the head.
Yeah. So is there anything from the Firefox OS project that they're going to be keeping around or anything that they've learned from that they're going to carry forward into other projects?
I'm not sure, actually. I don't know. I don't know that it talked much about what they're going to use. It talked about the pivots that they did throughout the project and how they tried to move towards like TVs and IoT and things like that. But I was more interested in the past than the future and what they'd done to get where they are today, and you know why from his perspective the project failed. Which, you know, it was a bit of a shame, and you know, it's quite nice because the article is interspersed with, you know, architectural diagrams of how Firefox OS is built and design mock-ups and things, and it was quite nice to see how, you know, it should have panned out, but didn't. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting pictures that is like near the end of the document is a photo montage of all of the devices. And it's 20 devices that went to market running Firefox OS, which is really admirable when you think Ubuntu phone, it was like, what, 5 devices total, I think, something like that. And they managed 20 running Firefox OS. It's pretty impressive.
So do you see any parallels there between Firefox OS and Ubuntu on phones?
I don't know. Maybe when we come to write the retrospective of Ubuntu, maybe we could talk about that. But there's certainly, you know, things like aiming a bit too high, I think, is what we both did. Maybe we had expectations that we could take on iOS and Android, and it was just too hard. You know, it's just not something to unseat those two. Mm. Needs something bigger than either of us. And when you look through the blog post and you look at the photos of like huge numbers of people who are all working together on this, or people who are getting together in order to do translations or to do hack days and bug fixes, like, I don't think Ubuntu phone ever had that number of people get together in one place other than, you know, Canonical employees. Yeah. So, you know, the fact that I feel somewhat better that, you know, us with significantly less money and significantly fewer employees and a significantly smaller community managed to achieve what we did compared to what they did with like a much higher amount of money and people.
Cool.
What's next, Mark?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, AMD, or it might have even been last week as we're recording this, AMD released their new Ryzen processors based on their new Zen architecture. So this is like their big next generation CPU architecture. And as part of this, they did an Ask Me Anything session on Reddit. And somebody on there...
They always go well.
Somebody on there asked them about open sourcing their platform security processor. Mm-hmm. The platform security processor, or PSP, is basically, as I understand it, essentially some embedded firmware on all of the CPUs, which has very low-level access to everything and is... basically a signed proprietary blob, which regardless of what OS you're running, that's running on the CPU all the time.
Is that like the equivalent of the Intel IME?
That's exactly the equivalent of that.
Right.
And the reason that they were asking about this was because things like Core Boot and Libre Boot, which are trying to make a completely open source firmware BIOS or UEFI replacement, can't work with one of these in place because of the security things it introduces. Something like Core Boot would either need to work with it or work around it, but they can't do that because it's a proprietary blob, which they don't know what it's doing. But the interesting thing about this was they asked the question and AMD's product manager, who was on the AMA, responded saying, "We've got no plans to do this, but, you know, anything could happen." Essentially, a bunch of people started getting in contact with AMD saying, "We'd love this to happen and here's why." Eventually, an updated response was posted on the thread saying, "This now has CEO level attention. It's not going to happen overnight, but we're looking at it."
Because this could be a differentiator for their chips versus
this is exactly,
Intel.
Yes, this is one of the things which was brought up in the list of reasonings. Not just, you know, it would be nice if you did this, but this is something that would actually make AMD different and popular with, you know,
a community
geeks
of people.
And the kind of people who might be in a company who are, you know, looking at buying a load of new computers might say, "Oh, we'll get stuff with AMD because, you know, they do good stuff, technically speaking."
Not just that, but the people who are interested in freedom and privacy and
also
anyone that's running, you know, servers who wants to guarantee, who's running, you know, data sensitive servers, maybe you're wanting to run Tor exit nodes or something like that, you would probably want to choose a platform that doesn't have this stuff at the at the hardware level.
Yes, absolutely. So it's going to be interesting to see if something like this could be the differentiator. And I think I've heard about this. I've heard this said on, I think, Bad Voltage a few times. Mm. An assertion that the next sort of big shift in the market is going to be around privacy and security. And this is actually the first sign that something like that might really happen, or at least be taken seriously
because of those
as
reasons.
A move.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. So this story reminded me, I think it was again while we were off air, there was a news article posted where somebody had figured out how to effectively write over the areas of the IME firmware to neutralize it. And I didn't understand all the technical implementation because it was extremely low level. But I have heard that Librem have now released a core boot version of their firmware.
Mm-hmm.
For their Librem 13 machines. And I'm wondering if they've, you know, used that technique of actually crippling the IME device, as was written about a few months ago.
Yeah, it was an interesting post, but it was really hardware specific. And I think, I think didn't they use like an Arduino and a Raspberry Pi and a load of soldering? You know, there were photos of a ThinkPad X220 with its guts spread all over the table.
Yeah.
You know, so it was quite an invasive process. Not quite, you know, stick this USB key in and flash in the new firmware. It was very invasive to get it to work. And, you know, lots of warnings of, this may break your laptop, and only this laptop model of laptop is the one that we've tested it on. So,
right. Yes. Don't try this at home.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Cool. Brilliant. So in other awesome news, WikiLeaks have released a, in inverted commas, trove of alleged CIA hacking documents. Just today, WikiLeaks are calling this Vault 7 as part of a series called Year Zero. And
it there sounds were a very Fallout.
Yes. There were a couple of articles earlier in the day which kind of spun this as the man now has access to your Telegram, WhatsApp, and Signal. But it's not really that, because that's kind of misrepresenting what's actually happening. What the leaks seem to show is that the security services, the American security services, seem to have access to the lower levels of your iOS and Android devices. And some of the published documents even indicate that they have zero-day vulnerabilities, multiple zero-day vulnerabilities that they haven't disclosed in both iOS and Android. So it really doesn't matter if you're using Telegram, you know, WhatsApp, Signal, or whatever other, you know, super encrypted thing, because if they can get in underneath that, then potentially all bets are off.
So message gets sent to your device, decrypted, and then they just read it from the OS.
Yeah, they read it from RAM.
Yay!
So this is probably trust zone vulnerabilities then.
I didn't read through all of them.
Despite its name.
Right. I didn't read through all of them, but one of the guys in our Telegram channel, Jordan Petridis, sorry if I mispronounced that, which I know I did, he said there were something like 12 iOS and 24 Android zero-day vulnerabilities. And it even alleges in one of the articles that the NSA purchased these exploits and then shared them with other agencies like the CIA and GCHQ. So it's not just like there's one rogue guy doing this. This is a systemic thing. It's not good, is it?
No.
No, it's pretty rubbish. Have you got any happy news to end on?
Don't tell me. Snap sort all this out, right?
It's quite... Okay, so amusingly, someone posted on the Ubuntu phone mailing list just today after this news broke saying, hey, is the Ubuntu phone vulnerable to all of this? And some community member, I think possibly without checking, said, nope, it's not. So there's your happy news. Is Ubuntu phone is fine, apparently, according to some guy on a mailing list.
Hooray.
And here comes a roundup of community news and events. First up in the news, we've got a tool that's worth a look, which is called build.snapcraft.io, which Martin and I demoed at MWC to a bunch of people.
About 10,000 times.
Yes. Yes. And the idea is it's tool to make it easy to make snaps. So you can feed to your GitHub repos, and it mashes them up and spits a snap out the other end. And what's really cool about it is it can do that every time you push a change to your GitHub. So once you've hooked it all up, every time you land something in your master branch, Snapcraft picks it up, compiles it, builds it for supported architectures, and then puts it in the store. So you can have a very, very fast turnaround from you know, doing a git commit and git push on your laptop to it landing in the store and your users being able to get access to your software.
So you have to, I guess you have to have your, is it snapcraft.yml file all working and ready to build, and then this will just do the actual automation of the process for you, yeah?
Basically, yeah. You have to create the YAML. If you don't have one, it will create a template.
Yeah.
And it depends how complex your app is as to how complicated the YAML is, but there's plenty of documentation for that and cool. Loads of examples. But yeah, once you've got the YAML landed in your master branch, you're good to go.
Excellent.
So Stefan Graeber, one of the LexC, LexD developers, has written a blog about how to run your own LexD demo server. And this allows you to create a web front end to a contained shell using LexD. And I think, Alan, you've actually followed the steps in this
blog
post, haven't you? How did it go?
It took 5 minutes and it is freaking amazing. It's brilliant. It's like, I've seen this before. And he said, oh, we've had this demo on the Linux Containers website for ages. You just go to the website. You want to try out LexD. You press a button and you get like a shell inside your browser window, right? It's, you don't have to SSH in or do anything. You just press a button and you get a shell like 5 seconds later. And you can play around inside that contained environment. So he's made it now available. So anyone can do that. So on my home server, my micro server, I just ran through the steps, pasting the commands in one after the other. It was only like half a dozen commands. And once I'd done it, I could then point my browser at my home micro server, press a button, and it sparks up a LexD container. And my thought was, this is great. I can do this to allow other people to run like training sessions. So everyone on the course, if I'm giving it like a training course, for example, I can just give everyone the URL. Everyone presses a button. Everyone gets their own container inside which they can do whatever they want because they get root inside the container, do whatever they want. And then at the end of the class, it's all thrown away. You can set a timeout on it. So it all disappears after an hour. The default's 30 minutes, but you can change that. And you can also change the OS that's inside it. By default, it's Ubuntu 16.10. But if you wanted to give a training course that was spinning up, you know, Fedora machines or Arch Linux or something else, so long as there's a LexC container for it, created for it, you can spin one up. It's amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely sounds like something worth playing with that.
Excellent. Next up, the Canonical design team has blogged about enabling HTTPS on various Canonical and Ubuntu websites.
Yeah, we mentioned this last year, I think. Someone wrote in, because we talked about SSL and Let's Encrypt, yeah. And I think we had some feedback from listeners who said, you know, why aren't the Canonical, you know, Ubuntu websites all SSL? And we talked about, you know, why... Why would you not? And there is no argument for why you would not, you know, it was the argument that some people give. Yeah. But they've been working on it and getting all the sites done, which is good.
Yeah. Mopped up all the mixed assets and everything's HTTPS enabled now.
Sweet.
Didn't Mark Shuttleworth get rich by having a certificate authority?
That might have happened a long time ago. Before he went to space.
One might have thought that this might have happened sooner. Never mind.
Yeah, maybe when he was in space, he maybe got hit with some ions or something that made him forget that. I don't know.
We'll ask him next time he's on, shall we?
Yeah, let's do
that. No.
Next up, Elizabeth Crumback Joseph has blogged that she's moving on from the Ubuntu Weekly News, as previously mentioned. We mentioned this actually last season, I think. Yes. She said that, and this is like a prime example of a great way of a community member stepping down from a project. She gave loads of notice, told everyone she was going to step down from the project, put a call out for new people to get involved, gave a deadline when she was going to step down, and sure enough, on the 500th issue of Ubuntu Weekly News, she stepped down. And yeah, that's fine. She's moved on to other things. She's going back to the Zubuntu project, I think. But I just think it's worth mentioning because she's done so much work to crank out those issues of Weekly News every week for years, I think it's worth thanking her for doing that, because it was not a easy thing to do, to herd a load of cats to generate some content every single week without fail.
She
did a good job.
It's also not an easy thing to do, to walk away from something after you've been doing it for so long. So yeah, well done for doing it well as well.
Yeah. Thanks for all the news, Liz. We're going to struggle to find news now.
Well, the semi-good news is issue 501 came out just now. So it's not like it's completely died. There are other people working on it. So that's good. But if anyone wants to get involved, you can go to wiki.ubuntu.com/UWN. And it's good because it doesn't require any programming knowledge to get involved. So if you do want to and you want to contribute a little bit of time each week, that would be really awesome. And I know the team who work on it would be very grateful.
Next up, we have an article from Leo, who's one of the QA team at Canonical, and he talks about crowd testing with the Ubuntu community. And in particular, he cites the case of IPFS.
What's that then?
Well, IPFS, this sounds amazing. I'd never heard of this before. IPFS is a permanent and decentralized web.
Isn't the web already decentralized?
Well, you get a peer-to-peer distributed file system where you can store and retrieve files.
It's not permanent, that's for sure.
This is how they pitch it. So in itself, IPFS looks like an interesting project to go and dabble with. But what Leo has written up there is a really good example of IPFS being a young project that's moving very quickly and releasing every week, and how the usual 6-month release cadence of Ubuntu, or even the 2 years between LTS releases, is just way too slow for that project, and how they've adopted snaps in order to continually push new builds to the store into Edge, and then periodically promote one of those releases up into candidate for a wider group of people, so the Ubuntu community who are interested in testing this, to test this and provide feedback to help the team move faster.
Nice.
Right.
Yeah, it's a nice little piece, but also an interesting project. So go and snap install that if you want to have a peer-to-peer distributed file system over the web.
Right. And next up, Green Recorder 2.0 and VidCutter 3.0 have been released. So Green Record is a desktop screen sharing application with some fancy features.
Screen sharing or screen recording?
Screen recording.
Right.
Thank you.
No worries.
And VidCutter is a cross-platform Qt 5 app which lets you easily trim, split, and join video clips without having to re-encode them when you do it.
I see why you've put those two together there.
Yes.
Yeah. So my friend Alan is working on some video projects, and when I saw these turn up on OMG Ubuntu, I thought, I wonder if these might be of any help.
I would like to. I will take a look at these. I haven't spotted these before, but I will take a look at them. Green Recorder is interesting. And I currently, the tools I'm using, one is FF Screencast, and the other one, one is FF Screencast, which is just a shell script that runs FFmpeg to record the screen. And the other one I'm using Kden Live, because I know how to use both of those. But yeah, I'm willing to look at other tools as well. So that's really awesome.
And finally, we've got some events. So, OggCamp 17 has been announced.
Woo!
Mark, I think you know more about this than anyone else here, so do you want to splash the details?
Yes. So, OggCamp 17. OggCamp is a free culture on conference, and it is happening this year on the 19th and 20th of August, and it's happening at Canterbury Christ Church University in Canterbury. So we have basically just confirmed the venue and got some accommodation sorted. But as usual, comes together more or less on the day, depending on who wants to talk about what, as it's an on-conference. So you can head over to ogcamp.org and you can get your tickets and you can find out about the accommodation. We've got some official accommodation this year, which is in the student accommodation for the university. So if you want a cheap package for your weekend's accommodation. You can find out more on the website and come and bring your talks, and we'll have more info as we confirm it. I will follow OgCamp on Twitter as well.
Is it the usual free to attend, but if you want to throw some money in when you buy your ticket, you can do that, and that will be really appreciated.
Pay what you want, including nothing.
Yeah, brilliant. And there's a delegate ticket option for those of you that want to expense it or whatever.
Yeah, so, yeah, so awesome. That's like a fixed price one if you want, but it's just the same as all the other tickets. It's just easier to expense it if it's not pay what you want.
Brilliant. And another event coming up is a FosTalk Live 2017, which is on the 24th of June 2017 at the Harrison, which is a pub in King's Cross, London. So
it's a city.
Yes, in England, which is in the world. Joe Ressington's organising this again. He did it last year and did a great job. It's a free evening of live, free and open source podcasts, which happens in the basement of the Harrison pub. We have a little stage and some seating, and upstairs people drink and eat and go outside and chat in the fresh air, and then downstairs in the dungeon we record a bunch of podcasts live in front of a studio audience, and it's a really, really nice afternoon evening out.
And
you get to see us as well.
Yep.
Yes, you could buy us all a drink.
Yeah, if you're feeling generous. FosTalkLive.com has got the podcasts that were recorded last year. At the moment, it's the Late Night Linux team, most of, and us are going to be performing, and Stuart Langridge and Dave Mega Slippers are going to be doing something as well. And if Graham, if you're listening, can you reply to Joe's email? He's getting a little bit upset now. Let him know if you're coming as well, please.
Awesome. And that's all the news and events.
We know you've got a Facebook account, so stop sharing cat photos for a moment and like or share our posts so your friends and family can find the Ubuntu podcast.
Ah, good to see Laura back.
Yes, one of many different things she's recorded for us in the off-season.
Cool. Oh, that's me. Sorry. That threw me a bit.
Seamless.
We'll get better at this.
Yeah. We need really some practice. Well, that's all for episode one. And we'll be back next week where we'll be reviewing the Entroware Ether laptop, and we'll bring you some command line love.
Oh, looking forward to that. I've not heard anything about this Ether laptop, so I'm looking forward to hearing about
this. You're going to hear lots about it.
Oh, tell your friends. If you want to know about the Ether laptop, tell your friends. Tell them to come to ubuntupodcast.org/telegram and talk all about it.
Yay. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Are we still doing that stop recording thing, or is that old hat now?
Ah, it's rubbish.